You are listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. Chapter 28. Ren.
What do you mean Seraphina's gone?
Travok asked, pushing himself to his feet as Varys came sliding to a stop.
I mean she's gone,
Varys said, voice coming out in a jagged thunder.
We were on the balcony, and things were going well, and then she went inside to get something to drink, and now she's gone!
Travok sent Ren a worried sideways glance. Varys seized on the look, lunging forward and demanding,
What? What do you know?
He is coming undone, Ren thought to herself, as she watched the golem's frantic eyes and spotted the little wisps of energy coming off him like steam. What has happened to you, Lieutenant? Brenora asked, casting an appraising eye over Travok's still bleeding nose and rumpled outfit.
Quatre cinct,
Zithril swore, shouldering his way past the Queen and Varys to come and gently take Ren by the arms.
Oh, don't act like you care about her,
Varys shouted, anger coming off him in a landslide.
We found him in the gardens, tumbling some girl. He pushed her straight into the bushes before we could get a good look at her. Sorry, Ren.
Zithril ignored this, gently lifting Ren's chin with his thumb and forefinger.
Did he hurt you?
He whispered, eyes searching her face.
Did I hurt her?
Came Travok's indignant question.
I am the one with the bloody nose.
The change that came over Zithril's face, the switch from kind-hearted concern to rigid rage, was so abrupt it took everything in Ren not to flinch back from his touch. The Prince of Altair prowled towards Travok, shoulders set in a fighter's stance as he spat,
In my experience, Travok, when a man and a lady are found alone in a hallway, and the man has a bloody nose, it is seldom the lady who has the explaining to do.
Ren rolled her eyes. There was no time for this. If they really wanted to come to blows, she would gladly referee the boxing match once they were safely in Whitesilver. But there was work to do now. I am not hurt, Ren said, placing a hand on his shoulder. I'm all right. And it is sweet that you want to defend my honor. But you and I both know that my virtue is well past protecting. The prince thinned his lips, glaring at the wizard, who was at least intelligent enough to stay silent. But Zithril's gaze once again turned kind as it settled back on Ren.
Demoiselle, you should know that your honor and virtue will always remain intact to me. They will always be untarnished.
It should not have mattered, but it did. To be seen, to be believed in such an unconditional way. Ren swallowed against the lump in her throat.
You give your trust and your loyalty too quickly, Nilsenia.
Nonsense.
Zithril smiled.
My loyalty has always served me well.
Ren thought about the journal in her bag, of the secret she was about to share, and her heart broke for the man in front of her. Perhaps we would all be more comfortable in my quarters. Her room seemed to shrink as the party walked through the door. Varys had to actually duck to avoid hitting his head on the doorframe, and his hair skimmed the top of the low ceiling as he started to pace.
Demoiselle!
Chirped Marcite from the door to the servants' room.
Has there been a change in plans?
Not yet, Marcite. Continue packing, Ren replied, watching Varys's determined back and forth march.
Should I get Nircir Tirvac some water for his face?
Marcite asked, eyes anxiously scanning the group in front of her. As far as Ren was concerned, the wizard could fetch his own water. However, Marcite looked in need of a job to be doing. There's a pitcher of water and some rags in my room. Marcite bobbed a curtsy and left without another word. The room was silent as the maid left, but as soon as the latch of the door clicked, the Queen of Durrandir turned her piercing green eyes on the former thought thief, pinning her to the floor as effectively as Travok's hands had pinned her to the wall.
What do you know, Ren?
Brenora finally asked.
Quite a lot at this point,
Travok answered, stepping in front of Ren in a way that might have been protective or might have been condescending. It was getting harder and harder to tell with this wizard.
With Ren's help, I was able to break inside Lithril's rooms tonight, and while there, discover Lithril's personal journal detailing her experiments with my magic and mental subjugation, as well as the spell work for very large and very dangerous working, which was written in code. But once again, thanks to Ren, I was able to translate the spell. I believe the princess has kidnapped Seraphina to use as the balance in this working, and we, and everyone else in Altair, are in very real danger.
Ren dug in her bag, produced the pilfered documents, and passed them to Trevok, who passed them to Brenora. The queen took one look at the spellwork written on the page and asked Ren,
"You can read this?"
It was an honest question, but it felt like a call for her to come out of hiding. It went against Ren's better judgment to be truthful, to show the full extent of her knowledge, but she had already shown Trevok, and they had bigger problems to deal with tonight than the languages she spoke. The game was over. It was time to reveal the cards in her hand.
"Yes, I can."
A long silence followed. Zithril leaned against the wall, studying the carpet. Varys continued to pace. Trevok stood soldier still, and Brenora chewed on the inside of her lip as she stared at Ren. Ren said nothing. She did not even move. She knew she was being measured, and she knew she was coming up short.
"What does it say, Trevok?"
the queen asked, at last turning from Ren to face her wizard.
"The spell or the ledger?"
Trevok asked, sounding like a man picking his way through broken glass.
"Either,"
Brenora said, and Ren could see the frustration and the restrained panic in the set of her jaw.
"Ren will have to explain the ledger,"
Trevok admitted, and Ren felt the full weight of the queen's attention land on her shoulders.
"You summed it up quite nicely," Ren said, pulling the journal from her bag. "It looks like she's been experimenting with a toxin that amplifies her mental abilities. She's been regularly dosing 4/5 of the palace, and the dates go back decades."
"Impossible,"
Zithril said from his place on the wall.
"Littrell is many things, but she wants to be a good leader. She would never do this to her people."
"She is doing this to her people," Ren insisted. "She poisoned me this afternoon."
"Because she was jealous,"
Zithril challenged.
"Because she was experimenting with the dosage,"
Ren countered before turning to Trevok. "If you turn to today's date, there's a table with Seraphina's, Brenora's, and my name. I think she was trying to figure out how much she would need to give each of us to get us out of the way."
"The spell. Get to the spell,"
Varys growled.
"Right,"
Trevok nodded, idly taking the diary from Ren's hand and walking to a nearby armchair, fidgeting with the book as he went.
"Like I said, I have never seen a working of this size. It is essentially 3 spells acting as one to generate enough power for the final purpose of the working, which is, I believe, to reopen the rift."
Ren had suspected it. Still, something about hearing the words aloud made her stomach shake. The words sat heavy in the room, and yet Varys was undeterred.
"Does the spellwork say anything about where Lithral might have taken Seraphina?"
he asked, turning too fast and hitting his head against the ceiling.
"We don't know that Lithral took her anywhere,"
Zithril said.
"We don't know that these things are even hers. What if they were planted in her room? Why would she keep such damning evidence in her own quarters?"
"What we don't know is if you're involved,"
Varys growled, rounding on the prince and moving forward.
"I beg your pardon,"
Zithril asked, still leaning against the wall, insult dripping from his lips.
"Are we really supposed to believe that you are the only member of your family that is not actively trying to open the rift?"
Varys shouted, taking a few purposeful steps towards the prince.
"No one in my family is trying to open the rift,"
Zithril answered, rising to the golem's challenge without ever rising from his slouch.
"No one in my family wants to start a war."
"Where is Seraphina?"
Varys boomed, towering over the prince, who was refusing to look intimidated.
"I do not think he is involved,"
Trevok interrupted from his seat in the corner. Marcite had returned with water, rags, and a comb, but Trevok failed to notice the woman standing there, waiting to attend to him. His whole attention was on Varys and Zithril.
"How could you possibly think that?"
demanded Varys, turning his frustration from Zithril to Trevok in a blink of an eye.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Rin, but there's a whole section in here dedicated to the prince and his staff. Why would she be systematically working her way through his house if he was already on her side?
Quoi? Zithril asked, taking the journal from Tervok. Rin watched him go, wanting to snatch the book from his hands and save him from this discovery, but knowing there was nothing she could do.
Tervok, the spell,
Brenora said, bringing them back to the task at hand.
Like I was saying, this spell is gathering an incredible amount of energy and channeling it through a balance. In a spell, the balance collects, amplifies, and redirects the magical forces and whatnot to their intended purpose. For this particular spell, the balance is being created by something called a lock, another thing called a key, and a person of the blood, which I believe means a descendant of the Aetherosh.
Seraphina? Brenora asked, whispering her friend's name as if it would bring her safely into the room. Tervok nodded. She's alive? The queen asked. Tervok gave another nod.
As of right now, yes, but a spell like this, it will stretch her abilities, her strength. It will force her to change and then give that energy back to the working.
God surround me, Rin gasped.
What? What does that mean?
Varys asked, panic making his voice shake the walls. The room went quiet for a moment. The only sound was Varys's ragged, panting breaths.
I...
Tervok started and then stopped.
It is difficult to explain. The legends surrounding the Aetherix.
I believe what Tervok is trying to say, Rin interrupted, glancing at the wizard who nodded his consent to continue, is that Dimmix, and I'm assuming Aetherix, possess the ability to tap into the great power within their physical bodies, usually during moments of extreme physical stress, like childbirth, for example. If I am understanding things, this spell would force Seraphina to that point over and over again, and then give her power back to the working.
Yes, Tervok said with a tired, worried nod. That about sums it up.
Glenn?
Came a small voice with an Altair accent. Rin looked up to see the Prince of the Hidden Kingdom, crouching by the door, book balanced on his knees like a small child.
This cannot be real,
Zithril whispered, tears streaking down his face and onto the journal in his lap.
Tell me this isn't real.
She came to his side, looking down and glancing at the names written on the pages in his hand. Elliot des Etolis was underlined several times with the words failed to dose next to his name in a frustrated, spiky script. Rin knelt down and gently took the book from his hands.
Zithril, there are reasons you do not tell your sister things.
Yes, but that is because of our father. Once she was no longer under his influence, she would. Things would. This isn't her.
It is, Nelsinia. It is her,
hiccuped a timid, shaking voice. Rin and the prince looked up to see Marcite, wringing her hands, face crumpling with the effort of holding back sobs.
We wanted to tell you, but we did not know how.
Tell me what, Marcite?
The prince asked from his spot on the floor, concern for his servant, pushing the tears from his voice. Marcite opened her mouth to answer, hiccuped, and then pressed her knuckles to her lips and shook her head.
Come, Marcite,
Zithril pressed, voice tender, eyes beguiling. And that was all it took for Marcite's face to tear in two and for her sobbing fears to come rushing out.
It used to be such an honor to be called to be on the princess's staff, but now it is a death sentence. But it is a death that we cannot even mourn, because these people, our friends, are still walking the halls, not knowing our names, not knowing the names or voices of their family, sometimes not even knowing their own names.
The note, Brenora whispered. You're the one that wrote the note.
Marcite gave one wrinkled apologetic nod, before turning back to the prince and pushing her words out past her tears.
We did not know if we could tell you, or even what to tell you, so we came up with a plan. You were the one in charge of finalizing the invitations, so I just...
Marcite trailed off, wringing her hands, makeup washing away with her tears. Zithril sprung to his feet, cradling the girl in his arms, his eyes dry and determined, the eyes of a king coming to terms with his new responsibilities.
Right, Brenora said. We don't have much time, then.
You will need weapons and a change of clothes,
Marcite said, stepping away from Zithril and eyeing Brenora's apron dress.
Yes, thank you, the queen said, dismissing Marcite with a nod.
With that, the maid was gone, disappearing with a curtsy before Ren could tell her to stay. Brenora turned her attention back to Ren.
You know where the princess has taken Seraphina? I cannot guarantee that this is where she is holding Seraphina, but Trevok and I discovered a door and a set of stairs in Lithrail's bedchamber, Ren said. Trevok should be able to get you there.
Are you not planning on coming with us?
Trevok asked, his tone more confused than outraged. Ren felt her mouth open, and her eyes made slow circles of the faces in the room.
I do not think I can be of any further use to you, she said slowly. In fact, I would probably be much more useful getting the prince to safety.
I am going with them,
Zithril said, stepping beside Trebok's chair.
I do not think that would be wise, Ren sighed.
She was not ashamed, she told herself. That was not why she refused to meet their eyes. Her gaze caught on her bracelet, her father's jewel, and the lessons she had learned. A chorus of voices sang those lessons in her mind.
Do not let yourself be used. Do not trust too quickly. Do not be made a fool.
But there was another bracelet sitting on her wrist now, a bracelet given to her by a woman she did not know, but who wanted to protect her all the same, because that woman wanted to do right. Brenora put two fingers under Ren's chin and lifted her face.
You and the prince can stay here if you like. I will not force you to put your life in danger to join my cause, but I will not allow you to leave Altair. You are not a threat, but you still have questions to answer.
Ren would not flinch, no matter how close the queen's face was to her, no matter how strong her voice, no matter how hot the green fire that burned in her eyes. Ren would not flinch.
I will go with you, she said, lips moving without asking permission from her brain.
Brenora nodded and stood back.
Good,
the Queen of Durandir said, wobbling slightly on her feet as she pulled herself back to her full height. Ren turned to the prince and asked,
Can you bless us?
Can they what?
Zithril responded, eyebrows drawing together in a question. Can you perform the blessing of your people on us? We're going to have a hard enough time defeating Lithril without also battling the Rift's effects. Everyone in the queen's party turned to the prince and glared.
Are you telling me that there was a way for me not to feel like I was about to fall over dead at any moment,
and you and your family never bothered telling us?
The queen asked, sharpening her blade with her voice.
It is one of our kingdom's defense systems,
Zithril said with a shrug that convinced no one.
It is something that should have been extended to us as a rite of hospitality. We can fight about this later,
Varys cut in, voice stretched to the point of breaking.
Will you bless them or not?
The prince rolled his eyes and gestured for Ren to stand in front of him. He placed two fingers on her forehead, a warm pulse emitting from his touch. It traveled down her back and around her chest. It was like being wrapped in warm bread, in love and protection.
You can run, but you cannot hide, whispered the voice of her teacher, before being smothered in the blessing's embrace, snuffed out like the flame of a candle.
Next was the queen, whose whole body sighed with relief as they watched the warmth rush through her. Varys refused Zithril's aid.
I want all the power I can get right now. You can bless me when we get back.
At last, it was Trevok's turn. As the wizard came to stand in front of the prince, His face flinched away from Zithril's touch, as if burned. The prince grimaced.
You have to willingly open your mind, Nircir. What does that even mean?
The dwarf harrumphed, as his features continued to spasm.
It means you have to let me in your mind. Not all the way, just a crack.
Zithril replied, holding up his thumb and pointer finger to show the smallest sliver of light between them.
I am standing in front of you. My mind is open. What else do you want from me?
Trevok answered, looking like he was resisting the urge to roll his eyes.
This is not what willing participation looks like, Nircir.
Yes, it is.
Open your mind,
the prince said through gritted teeth.
If it were any more open, something would fall out,
Trevok answered, grinning in frustration. Ren saw Zithril deliver the mental hit in the set of his shoulders and the glint of his eyes before he ever raised his hand to the dwarf. He pulled back his arm and jabbed his finger right above the bridge of Trevok's nose. For anyone else, the gesture would have been rude, immature, insulting, but ultimately harmless. However, for a person like Zithril, a blow like that had the potential to be devastating. Trevok stumbled backwards, clutching his head, catching himself on his chair. He stood there, clawing at the arms, shuddering and panting like a dog being driven mad by fleas.
Was that really necessary?
Ren hissed as she went to his side.
I am sorry. He would not open his mind, so I had to force the door,
Zithril replied, not sounding sorry at all.
What good is your blessing if it leaves our wizard sprawled on the floor?
The queen growled as she closed the distance between herself and the prince with steps that reminded Ren of a prelude to a ballroom brawl.
He will be fine,
Zithril insisted, gesturing towards Trevok with a wave of his hand. Ren glared at her friend and wondered if it would do any good to hit him as she placed a steady hand on the dwarf's back. Trevok, she whispered,
can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you,
Trevok answered, voice shaking, not with pain, but a quiet tremor of laughter.
And do not worry, I feel fantastic.
His voice was wrong, wrong in a way Ren could not pin down. It sounded like Trevok. It still held his cultivated white-silver accent, but something was off about his cadence. The voice that had once belonged to the natural storyteller now slithered out of him as he rolled his neck and stretched his shoulders. His words crawled between her legs, wrapping themselves around her ankles, trying to trip her up and hold her in place.
Are you certain you are all right?
She asked, stepping back to give him room.
Oh, more than certain,
he grinned, looking hungry and eager.
Am more than ready to move on to the next event.
See, I told you,
Zithril said, quick and dismissive.
Now, we should be going.
You are not going anywhere, your highness, Brenora chimed in, turning to the prince.
I most certainly am,
Zithril insisted.
Littrell is my sister.
My point, exactly, the queen answered, without bothering to elaborate.
If you think that I am just going to let you go down that tunnel without me and kill her? You are sorely mistaken. I am her brother. I can reason with her. No one has to die tonight.
The Queen of Durandir stared up at the elf prince, eyes too tired for pity. Rin stepped forward and took Zithril's hands in hers.
Even if she survives, and we survive, and everything turns out well, she is never going to be the Queen of Altair, Zithril. No one in this world will allow that. She will be taken away and questioned. Thought thieves will be hired, and every inch of her mind will be explored, examined, taken apart. And while this is happening, Altair will be left in tatters. And if you are killed tonight, your people will have no one.
Rin gazed up at the prince, squeezing his fingers, pleading with her eyes for him to see reason. Zithril scoffed, wrinkling his nose, holding back tears.
And what about her?
He said, at last flicking a hand towards Brenora.
Does she not have a people and a duty to think of?
I am not talking to her. I am talking to you. Let Brenora make up her own mind, but you, you have to stay here.
Where it is safe, Ren thought to herself. Where you will not have to look at your sister's blood on your hands or witness the death of your family. He looked down at her, caught somewhere in a world of choices and pain. His eyes flooded and searching. Zithril opened his mouth, but whether it was to agree or argue or sob, Ren never found out. One moment he was staring at her, the next he was choking, gasping for air as his skin paled and the light in his face danced. His head drooped, and then he was on the floor with an unceremonious bang. She looked up, open-mouthed, from the prince at her feet to Varys as he pulled his hand back, gold light twirling around his fingers and disappearing into his skin.
Is he dead?
Ren squeaked, dropping to her knees beside Zithril.
Shouldn't be, the golem said. I just drained him to the point of exhaustion. He should wake up in the morning with a headache.
That, Ren stammered, as she put her knife under Zithril's nose and breathed a sigh of relief when his breath fogged the metal.
That was going to take too long, Varys finished for her. I'll help you get him into bed, but after that, I'm leaving. We're just wasting time.
She watched helplessly and tried not to panic as the giant scooped the prince into his arms. Varys was getting anxious, and she could feel the pull around him, the call in her body to fight or flee. Trevok claimed he was fine, but Ren doubted that. It was a miracle he was standing upright and not drooling on the floor after the blow Zithril had dealt him. Brenora seemed to be the only one with sense left. But how clear-headed could the queen be with her dearest friend tied up in a dungeon with a madwoman? How clear-headed would Ren be if it was Rita they were marching off to save? They all trailed through the door after Varys and watched him lay the prince in the bed. Just then, the servants passaged open to reveal Marcite and Elliot.
Oh, thank the four,
Ren breathed and rushed forward.
I am sorry, Demoiselle, but he found me and insisted,
Marcite began, but Ren waved off her concerns with a hand. It is all right, Marcite. He can be trusted, she said to the room at large before asking, Elliot, can you come barricade the door? But Elliot pushed past Ren, going straight to the bed. He stood over Zithril, cracks starting to form in his starlight face as his hands twitched at his side. His need to hold his lover, to touch his face, at war with his common sense.
What is happening?
He hissed at Ren as she came to his side.
He is fine, just fainted from all the excitement,
Ren whispered back.
I do not think there is time to tell you everything. What I can say is Lithril is more dangerous than we thought, and we are going to try to stop her.
And he is going to be all right,
Elliot said. Ren could not tell if he was asking her a question or speaking reassurances to himself.
He will be fine, and so will you and Marcite. Just barricade the door. Do not let anyone else in that is not me or the queen. If you do not hear from us by morning, wait till Zithra wakes, then head towards White Silver.
She turned to leave, but before she could, Elliot grabbed her by the hand. A quick press of fingers, a request for attention.
Once he chooses someone, his love grows quick, and his loyalty is unshakable. I think this is something you understand, Demoiselle,
Elliot said, his eyes still fixed on Zithril's face.
He would not want you going into danger without him,
Ren squeezed Elliot's fingers. Sometimes it is not about giving the people we love what they want. Sometimes we have to give them what they need. I think that is something you understand, Nilsia. Elliot smiled and dropped her hand to wipe away the tears that had started to fall.
That might be so. But please remember that I will be the one left picking up the pieces if you do not walk back through that door.
Ren turned and gave him a swift kiss on the cheek. I will be back. I've been told that I have at least 7 more lives to spare, she said with a cheeky wink. She did not feel, before slipping from the room to meet an uncertain fate. Chapter 29. Seraphina.
Try not to move, Demoiselle Morningstar,
came a calm, focused voice.
I do not want you smudging my work.
Seraphina blinked her eyes and for a moment felt utter hopelessness. She was still dreaming, and she was back in the cave. She would never escape this nightmare. There was no one coming to wake her. But then she felt the chains around her wrist and smelled the sharp, cold, clean scent of mint and determination. A chill prickled over her bare skin as someone brushed something cold and sticky over her abdomen. She was still trapped, but she wasn't alone, and this was all too real.
You can speak if you like, but no sudden movements as I work. I have to connect my markings to your scars,
said a familiar voice from somewhere beneath her. Something brushed across Seraphina's skin, a robe pulling open at her thigh, a serpent slithering across her leg. Reflexively, she jerked back, head snapping around to look at what was touching her, only to be brought up short by a collar at her throat. Choking, she tried to bring up her hands to save herself from strangulation, to protect her neck, only to find them fastened to the floor.
Lean back, Demoiselle, lean back against the stake.
She obeyed the command, wheezing against the post at her back, catching her breath.
The thrill?
She rasped the question.
Oui,
the princess answered, never rising from her position on the floor, never stopping in her work.
Where are we?
Seraphina asked.
A cavern below the city. Please stop moving. You are going to make me lose my place in the pattern.
Something large shifted next to Seraphina's face, and a bit of viscous drool dripped onto her exposed collar. She swiveled her eyes as wiry fur brushed against her skin, and a growling breath tickled her ear. She tried to scream, but only managed to cough against the shackle at her throat.
Ah!
Lithuril cried in frustration, leaping to her feet and shooing the monster away. A marchand de nuit came loping into Seraphina's sights, did two small circles, and then curled into a ball at her feet.
I will have to do this section over,
tissed the princess in Seraphina's ear as she started dabbing at the saliva with a piece of cloth. Lithril's face came into view. She was as beautiful as ever in the robe she wore the night of her mother's death, but there was an intensity that had been absent since their arrival in Altair. The scent of mint that rolled off her stung Seraphina's nose, adding to the pounding in her head.
Do not be afraid, Demoiselle,
the princess reassured Seraphina as she took a paintbrush and started to drag ink across Seraphina's shoulder, tracing the path of the scars.
The beasts are quite tame. The ones my brother was hunting when you met him had wandered too far for me to receive their medicine. But the ones with us tonight will only do as I ask.
Would they need medicine if you weren't trying to open the rift?
Seraphina asked, playing for time, looking for information. The princess paused in her work, a sudden tense halting right at the joint of her captive's elbow.
I would normally be furious with someone for entering my memories uninvited, but I suppose you could not help it,
she said, before continuing with her process.
Besides, this will make things easier, no? You already know what is happening.
Seraphina's eyes traveled around the room as they became more accustomed to the dark. Figures lined the walls, vague, shadowy bodies in the darkness, standing at attention, waiting for a command.
Ink!
Lithril called out, causing Seraphina to jump as the princess shook out her hand and snapped her fingers. Seconds later, a man appeared, carrying a silver tray with various odds and ends. Lithril didn't so much as look in acknowledgement of the man's presence. She just carried on with her work, making long marks and little adjustments as she went. But once Seraphina saw the man's face, she could not look away. King Fergie's skeletal features were blank as his daughter drew symbols on Seraphina's exposed flesh. His wig was gone, showing his bald head and its few remaining wisps of hair. His milky eyes stared forward, focusing on nothing as his jaw hung slack. He looked so vulnerable like that, so innocent, like a less than intelligent cow going to slaughter. Still, Seraphina couldn't pity him. She knew what that man had done. She had felt his young daughter's terror in the dark. Lithril looked up from her sketching and followed Seraphina's gaze. Without warning, the princess pulled a short stiletto from the curls on her head and drove it into the man's thigh.
The king did not so much as flinch as the blood started to seep through the cut on his pants.
He is harmless, Lithril said with a shrug, before returning to the task before her. I made sure to have my father declawed before my mother's death. If I do not keep up on his dosage, he can become agitated. But other than that, he is as docile as that dog at your feet.
How much did you give your mother? Seraphina choked. Did she know what you were doing to her when you killed her? Or do you hope her mind was long gone when she toppled off that cliff?
She knew she shouldn't have said it. Lithril was dangerous, and there was no point to her words except to cause the woman pain. But there was something about being drugged and held prisoner that made Seraphina forget her decency and common sense. Still, it was a surprise how fast the princess jumped to her feet and slammed Seraphina's head into the metal beam behind her. Her head cracked with the impact and sent pain ringing through her skull. Stars danced in front of Seraphina's eyes, and she drooped to her feet, stumbling, knees buckling. The chain around her neck pulled tight as she once again gasped for air.
Up, 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 demoiselle!
The princess growled as she lifted Seraphina by the chin and pushed her back into the post. The memory of the king's hands on his daughter flared to life in Seraphina's mind, and her body thrashed against her bonds.
Stop it!
Hissed Lithril as she placed the still bloody knife against Seraphina's throat. Lightly, she dragged the point of the blade up to Seraphina's ear and across her jaw, whispering,
Do not smudge my ink. I am tired of redoing my work. And keep my mother's name off your lips, or I will sew them shut. I need you alive for now, but there is plenty of ways to cause you pain. Understand?
Yes,
Seraphina whispered.
Good,
Lithril replied, pulling back and beckoning her father forward. The knife fell onto the tray with a heavy clang, followed by delicate chimes that put Seraphina in mind of children's fairy stories. She wondered briefly if Varys knew any of the newer children's rhymes, and fought to keep her heart from breaking at the idea that she would never get a chance to ask him.
Do you have any messages for me? I have a friend who was quite keen on seeing you. I was sure he would pop in to say hello while you were dreaming,
the princess asked. Seraphina struggled to make sense of the question. The pain in her head blended all too well with the strong sense of power and wrath that were coming from Lithril. Her thoughts would not stay still. They wanted to dance with that tinkling sound of metal on metal coming from the tray. But at last her mind caught on the image of long, pointed hands and black embroidery on a red coat.
He said that he was coming, but he couldn't guarantee that he would be here in time, and that you got yourself into this mess, so you need to get yourself out,
Seraphina said in a slow, halting sentence.
That man,
Lithril spat.
The absolute arrogance.
No matter,
I have it all in hand, and it will be over soon.
The princess turned to face Seraphina and presented her with a necklace. With the necklace, with the gate gem. Lithril lifted the jewelry over Seraphina's head, settling it around her neck, positioning the rose with the gem at its center in the hollow of her throat, and moving the smaller flower up to rest against her collarbone. The metal felt like knives, like needles, like shards of ice digging into her body and rushing through her blood.
Every 5 years or so, I have to pick another to continue my mother's legacy,
the princess said as she straightened the necklace and smoothed Seraphina's hair, smiling as Seraphina started to convulse.
It was a privilege for her to be chosen to serve that higher purpose, and I always try to seek out those who are worthy of that honor. You are here, not just because you are the only option, Demoiselle Morningstar. I believe you are worthy of this honor. My mother widened the rift, and you shall push it the rest of the way open and call forth its full power.
You have been listening to Thought Thief by K.E. Preston. And
If you want to continue listening, that option is now available to you. Thought Thief is now available as an audiobook for free to all patron subscribers, as well as for purchase on all major listening platforms. Thought Thief is also available in paperback and ebook. Links to where you can purchase all of these things can be found in the episode description below and on my website, kepreston.net. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, please consider leaving us a review or even sharing this with a friend. Thought Thief is recorded and edited by me, K.E. Preston, with editing help from Hanson Lyman and Mark Gardner. Thought Thief is a work of fiction by K.E. Preston, with developmental editing and linguistics help from Amanda Berry. Thought Thief is a Lit Lab production. Thank you for listening.